All right, it is a good Thursday. Thanks for jumping on in. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. Welcome on into the streaming show, part of what we do. We have our television show tonight on Fox Sports Arizona at 6 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and 1 a.m. for those of you with DVR. Today on the stream show, we also stream on AZ Central Sports. We appreciate our people over at AZ Central checking us out as well. Dave McGinnis is going to join us, former Cardinals head coach. It's been a long time since he's been the coach here, but Coach Mack will always live in fans' hearts that are true Cardinal fans through the years. He's now the Rams assistant head coach with Jeff Fisher. So it's not like I can talk to him directly about defense, but Coach Mack looks at both sides of the football. How's Nick Foles' development and Todd Gurley going to play and how good is this defensive front and all that stuff as we get ready for Sunday's game. Rams and Cardinals. I have a feeling about this Sunday's game. Last week, I just felt like and said on the air that the Cardinals are just flat better than the 49ers and they should win. I think the Cardinals are flat better than the Rams, but man, this will be the best defense for the Cardinals that they have faced so far this season. So the thought that the Cardinals are just going to roll right through St. Louis, they may well do it, but this will be the best defensive front they've played by a long ways. This will be the best front seven by a long ways. Greg Williams, a defensive coordinator for the Rams, is one that is not afraid to come after you. And it's not like Rob Ryan, because Rob Ryan doesn't have the horses in New Orleans that they have in St. Louis. They're going to come after Carson Palmer this week. That's just how it's going to be. And I don't think that St. Louis has near enough offensive talent. I don't. I do believe that the Cardinals will win this game, but I don't think it's going to be, you know, there's this blowout mentality going on around the valley, or actually around the state from what I'm gathering from people, just checking email and message boards and stuff being sent to me, that they're just going to roll right through this. And the tidal wave is continuing. And, you know, when do you see the first loss for the Cardinals? It's not going to happen for a while. I don't think it's going to happen this week. I think they're going to win, but it's going to be more difficult than the previous three games have been. I mean, you think about the last 2 weeks, those games were over. I mean, done. First quarter, second quarter, over with. And I felt like the Saints game was pretty much in control all the way through, even at the end. So, but it'll be very difficult. I look forward to talking to Dave McGinnis. Jake Plummer will be with us for our weekly segment. So Jake and I have been doing this for I don't know how many years now, of going back and forth. And there are times where Jake will bring the sledgehammer to the party. I don't think he needs to bring the sledgehammer today. I think he needs to bring the fly swatter, or maybe something a little bit more severe than a fly swatter to this with ASU. I'm just kind of tired of them telling, I'm just tired of hearing Coach Graham tell me how great this team is. If he hadn't said anything after last Saturday night's game, I think I'd be in a better place than I've been all week long. I mean, Eric, are you the same way? Like this, when Coach Graham said that after the, when Todd Graham said that after the loss,
he just shouldn't even have. I mean, he was asked about it, so I guess he had to answer the question. But
how was he asked about it? Do you remember? Was it just somebody said, hey, at the start of the year, you said this was your best?
Yeah,
team
your buddy,
ever?
Your buddy Chris Cartman was the one that asked, and he basically said, you know, before the season started, you were pretty adamant and open about this being the best team. You're now at 2-2. Do you still feel that way? And his response was, I do feel this is my best team. That is my opinion. And then he went on to, we're faster on defense. We're deeper on special teams.
Not against then, USC and Texas A&M, you're not faster.
But then flattened out by saying, we're making too many critical errors. Our tackling needs to improve. So he sort of jumped from one side of the street to the other. He defended what he said earlier in the year, but then talked about the deficiencies that this team has.
Okay, so if he turns around and says, I thought that was the case at the start of the year, but obviously I'm wrong. Then the reaction within his locker room is the coach doesn't believe in us, right? And he has a chance of losing the locker room if he takes the answer that we would all like to have heard him say. First of all, good job, Chris. You know, anybody who's there on the beat every day should be asking those types of questions now. That's just how it is.
And ASU's been so prideful recently of being a transparent program. I mean, they've done some really cool things, letting some of the media sit in film sessions and all that good stuff. They're in a tricky spot. I mean, they've played four games. They've beaten two bad teams, and they've lost to two good teams.
But in all four games, they haven't looked good.
No.
So, no, but I guess if I'm trying to take Todd's side of that, if he says, obviously I was wrong, then I think he probably loses the locker room. Then you have to look at it from the standpoint of, it's only four games in, okay? The Pac-12 South, is Utah really going to run away with this? Is Utah better than UCLA and USC? It's all about how a team plays and comes together. If we're sitting here next week saying, boy, can you believe ASU went to UCLA and won? Nobody's thinking that is going to be the story. I mean, poor Jared Cohen is going out to a story that he could just write from his room, but instead he's flying out Friday, and he'll have all this content up on our site on sports360az.com. I guess for a game that everybody says they're not going to win. I kind of look at it like this. Nobody said that Utah was going to go to Oregon and win. And what did Utah do? Not only did they win, they completely demolished Oregon. Nobody felt that USC should be stepped on by Stanford, but Stanford came in and bullied them and punched them in the face and knocked them all over the place. Nobody really believed Cal was going to be that good. So is it Todd Graham saying, I'm trying to take his side here for a minute because I've just pounded on him, I've made fun of him this week, and now I'm trying to look at their side on this. Is it their belief that the Pac-12 South is just going to be nothing but cannibalism every weekend? That every weekend, they're going to eat up each other. And so by the end of the year, we may well have a conference or a division within a conference where there are three or four losses for the team that ends up winning the conference title. We've never seen that before. Nobody can predict that. People can have very strong opinions that, oh, well, Brad, that's never going to happen. I don't know that. I don't know that. I don't know if UCLA can just run right through everybody. I don't know if USC can play as well as they did last week and as poorly as they did against Stanford. I don't think Utah can beat both USC and UCLA. I don't know that. There are no certainties this year in college football. I don't know if Alabama is going to beat Georgia this weekend. I don't know that. You would think that they would. I don't know what Ohio State's going to do with their quarterbacks last year, or this year rather. I mean, if you think to the start of this year in college football, at the start of the year, it was Cardell Jones is going to be a first-round, can't-miss quarterback in the NFL draft. And what's gone on with Cardell Jones at Ohio State? That's not the case as it sits right now. Then there's been Christian Hackenberg is going to be this great quarterback at Penn State, and he's going to be a Heisman Trophy candidate, and he's going to be this, and he's going to be that. And Christian Hackenberg hasn't done much of anything. Now, the NFL people that I've talked to, or agents, or people along those lines, think Christian Hackenberg is going to be a terrific pro player, that he will be, along with Jared Goff at Cal, the two quarterbacks that will rise to the top of this year's NFL draft. I don't know that to be certain. So there is no certainty this year, and maybe in the Pac-12 South, there is going to be a team or two or three that are going to have two or three losses. ASU is clearly behind the eight ball. U of A, not so much, because this is not a divisional game. They play Stanford this week. When you have your divisional games, you have to win. ASU wins this week, beats UCLA. All of a sudden, it's a completely different narrative. It just is. They have Colorado at home, who they should beat, and that sets up a big game at Utah. They get drilled this week, and they can't figure it out this week. Then, yeah, 0-2 off the rails, and Eric and I are making plans around the holidays to go to El Paso. Or Eric's making plans, I should say, to go to El Paso.
Yeah, you never go. So no, don't make it sound like you're going with me. It's me.
I went to Vegas.
Vegas is much better than
El Paso. I went to San Francisco.
San Francisco is even better than Vegas.
I went to...
It's funny how the CEO can pick the trips. Eric, you're going to El Paso and Pullman.
Last year, I'm the one that went to Seattle.
No, you went to Corvallis.
I went to Seattle and Corvallis. I took one for the team.
No, but Seattle's great. I've never been to Corvallis.
Seattle's not great when there's a typhoon going on and the stadium is shifting in the wind and it's an open-air press box and it's 40 degrees and they're playing like slop.
Wasn't that one of those, going out.
Was that one of those
8:23 p.m.
Yes,
kickoffs, too?
And the bridge back to Bellevue is closed because there's water coming over the top of it and I thought I needed Noah's Ark to get home. Mm. It's not great.
Okay. Yeah, my day trip to El Paso wasn't that bad. So.
Now, you know, the Pac-12 basketball tournament, I nominated myself to go to Vegas last year. And, yeah, I did nominate myself to go with U of A to Portland last year. I get it. Should I take a junk road trip? Is that what you're suggesting?
No.
I thought about going with ASU basketball and Bobby Hurley back to New Jersey because I'd like to tell that story. New Jersey the week of Thanksgiving doesn't sound like a picnic.
Well, and I went to Houston, so I got my bad trip out of the way already. Boy, that place is just, what a
hole. You can't get around? Yeah, but you were at Texas A&M ASU.
Yeah, I didn't have to be
there. There's nothing
wrong
with that.
No, no.
I mean, if they had a road trip, that's what I was going to do. Here's the other part of ASU, and then I know we've got Dave McGinnis. Actually, I'll save this because this is more of a long-term. The importance of this game financially for Arizona State against UCLA. Next year, they don't have U of A coming here. They don't have USC coming here next year. So if you don't have a good regular season this year, your season tickets are going to be impacted by your schedule next year because you're not going to get a whole lot of people to see some of these teams. You're not going to have Oregon back here probably next year. All right, Dave McGinnis is next. Former Cardinal head coach, Rams assistant head coach from St. Louis, previewing Rams Cardinals. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. And now here's Dave McGinnis joining us, Brad Sussmat, Football AZ, the former Cardinal head coach, Rams assistant head coach, Rams Cardinals Sunday at the stadium. Coach Mack, how are you?
Brad, I'm doing good. Good to talk to you, brother. How are you?
I'm good. Good. Voice is strong. I'm on the right side of the grass. How's that? You know what I'm saying?
That's a plus.
There you go.
Count that as plus.
Rams season so far. Tell us about the team rolling in here on Sunday.
Well, I mean, you know, we got off to an exciting start, you know, with a big division win over Seattle. And then we played very poorly, you know, at Washington and got beat on the road and then came back here and lost a close game against, a really good Pittsburgh team. So we're disappointed in being 1-2. And, you know, we realize the challenge ahead of us this week because, the Cardinals are playing as good a football as anybody in the league right now. I mean, I would, you know, as far as all the stuff that I've seen so far, you know, watching tape here throughout the league is, the Arizona Cardinals are playing as good a football as anybody going right now 3 weeks in.
What strikes you most when you see them on tape, Dave?
Well, I think, they're very talented. To me, Carson Palmer, after 30 years in the league, I've drawn up defensive game plans, you know, against Carson, you know, several places that he has been. I've been on staff that have had to defend him. I think he's playing as good a football as he's ever played in his career. I think that, you know, that Bruce is doing and his coaching staff's doing an outstanding job, with that football team offensively. I mean, offensively, they've got, multiple weapons. They know what they're doing. Their quarterback, the one thing that you can't manufacture in this league, Brad, is experience. And experience at the quarterback spot and experience on coaching staffs in this league is more important now than it's ever been. And clearly they've got a very experienced staff. They've got an experienced quarterback that I think is playing, as I said, as well as he's ever played. And then defensively, that's a very athletic, fast, physical defense. You don't take that many balls away from opposing offenses and score that many points this early in the season unless you're a very athletically gifted and clearly, you know, even losing Todd Bowles, they've done a tremendous job of keeping that defense high. I mean, the Arizona Cardinals are a really, really good football team.
Flip it around, though. This is as good of a pass rush and a front seven as the Cardinals have faced this season. You guys have got it going on that side of the football.
Yeah, I think, that we've, when we came in here, 3 years ago, what we had to do was rebuild this roster completely. And, we were fortunate in that Chris Long and Robert Quinn, were already here. And then we've been able to build around that. And, of course, that's one of the things that, that Jeff Fisher and has always tried to build is a strong defense. And strong defenses start up front, especially in this league, with a premium of being able to go, get after the quarterback. Back and those types of things. So we've put a concerted effort into doing that, and I think we've done a decent job of it. But we've got to translate that into wins. But defensively, you're only as good as your last outing. I mean, we played very good against Seattle. We did not play well defensively against Washington, and then we played pretty decent defense last week against Pittsburgh. But I've been fortunate enough in all the years that I've been in this league. on the defensive side of the ball to have been a part of some dominating defenses throughout the history of this league. And the one thing that you measure a defense on is how consistent they are. So, you know, the consistency that that we need, we have to have, and you have to bring it every week. And we're definitely going to have to bring it this week because this is a very good, as I said, this is a very good and talented. You know, I think Bruce Arians has done a tremendous job down there. And then, of course, I give Steve Keim a lot of credit, you know, for what he's done. I think he's one of the best drafting young GMs in this league. He's put together a really good team. You know, I was fortunate enough to, I've been in a draft room, you know, when I was there in my time with the Cardinals,
right,
with Steve Keim when he was an area scout. And I can vividly remember, you know, on two occasions, Steve Keim standing up and he and I being in the minority in the room as far as two very big picks, you know, in Cardinal history, and Adrian Wilson and Anquan Boldin. And Steve Keim was willing to stand on the table for both of those guys. And so I've got a lot of respect for him in what he's doing.
Wow, strong stuff there, Dave. Before I let you go, Todd Gurley, we're expecting to see a heavy dose of him. And Nick Foles, of course, former U of A player. Talk about both those players on your offense.
Well, both of those players are new, you know, to our program here. And of course, clearly Todd is just now rounding into shape. You know, we'll see. You know, he got his first taste of the NFL last week, with some limited carries, you know, against Pittsburgh. And of course, clearly, you know, we'd like to see him be able to increase more, but that's going to be dependent, you know, upon him. And of course, it's still a work in progress. Of course, Nick, you know, with the trade that we made for Nick, you know, with Philadelphia, we're very pleased with him. He's got all the leadership qualities that you need. We're just very, very young on the offensive side of the football. And again, it's, as I said, the one thing you can't manufacture in this league is experience. And right now, when you're experienced not only in years in the league, but also in the system that you're in, you just cannot overestimate how important that is, especially in the NFL today, where you're constantly, you know, ginning and turning rosters over. So we're very happy with both of those players, but clearly, you know, not any of us are happy with this 1-2 record. So we've got big job ahead of us this weekend, Brad.
Appreciate the time, Dave, and good hearing your voice as always. Thanks,
Brad. It's always a pleasure. Thanks, brother. Talk to you.
Dave McGinnis with us for a couple of minutes. Appreciate his time. Good stuff there. That story about Steve Keim with Adrian Wilson and Anquan Boldin. I'll take that. That is awesome. Good stuff there with Dave McGinnis. Jake Plummer is going to join us in a couple of moments. I've got some time here, though. You know, when you hear Coach Mack talk, first of all, whenever I hear Dave McGinnis talk, I'm sitting here having flashbacks of Pat Tillman. And that's just how it's going to be for somebody like myself, because we remember that era so fondly. We also remember how hard and the blood and the sweat and the tears, literal tears, that Dave McGinnis put in trying to get this thing turned around. And he was on the front end of it. He was somebody that was desperately needed for the Cardinals to be a face and a voice that fans could gravitate towards. And I'm very pleased to see him do so well and from Tennessee over to the Rams and to be there with Jeff Fisher. I would say, though, it's getting to be a big time for St. Louis in this regard. They've had a whole bunch of high draft picks. You go back to the RG3 deal and you see how they built their roster. And I admire what they have done defensively. But for whatever reason, when you look at St. Louis, I don't see big-time playmaking wide receivers on that roster like they used to have. The Rams were known, and, you know, greatest show on turf and all that stuff. The Rams were known to just have playmakers, and they've put a lot of resources and a lot of energy and a lot of dollars and a lot of picks into the defensive side of the football, which is fine. It just seems to me that if Kenny Britt's as good as it's going to get, and you need some other players to move forward. And Tavon Austin has been, Erica, how would you describe Tavon Austin at this point? I mean,
a disappointment.
Yeah.
Inconsistent,
yeah.
Shows flashes, but certainly not the
He's
pinball
not the guy that they wanted.
Video game that he was at West Virginia.
Yeah. No, that's a good way to put it. Inconsistent. And Todd Gurley, it didn't sound as though, and just in hearing coach talk, that's going to be somebody that we're going to see a lot of carries out of this weekend. If it's 25, 30 carries, he's not there yet.
This could be an ugly game for the Cardinals. Not saying they're not going to win, but this could be one of those 2010 games where...
I'm even thinking like 1960.
Something like that. Because the Rams' offense isn't great, but the Rams are pretty stingy on defense.
I think they're going to get after Carson this
Probably.
Week. I mean, we're going to know a lot more about the Cardinals' offensive line after Sunday's game than what we've seen the first 3 weeks. You know, we felt like the 49ers would be able to put some pressure on him. Carson got hit a couple times, but you know, are they going to make Carson uncomfortable? Are they going to come blitz? Is it going to be Greg Williams coming after him? Because that's what Greg Williams types of defenses do. And we've seen some games between Rams and Cardinals in the past where it gets out of hand because the defense just starts running downhill. All right, Jake Plummer's on the other side. We're going to get straight up with Jake about the ASU situation. I also want to talk to him off the top about Anu Solomon. It doesn't sound like Anu's going to play, and then Rich Rod's got to go with a quarterback in Randall if he doesn't play against Stanford. That is more of a scrambler than a thrower, so we're going to talk about both. Jake Plummer joins us now for a couple of minutes. We'll get into ASU momentarily. I want to start, though, with Anu Solomon and the concussion for U of A as they go to Stanford this weekend. How big of a loss is this for Rich Rodriguez if he's not able to go, Jake?
I'm sure it's tough. You know, Anu's a good player, a guy that finally has got a quarterback coming back in the system. First time in a while for him to have a returning starting quarterback. So it's always hard to lose your leader and your starter and a guy you count on to make plays, but you know, they're going to have to just make do. Like losing their number one guy on defense, Stubbe, they've had to just try to step up and get guys around them to play better. And after taking a beating like they did last week, nothing to do but lick your wounds and get back at it and try to go down to Stanford and play a really hard, tough, physical football team, which doesn't bode well when you're already battling injuries, but you know what? Teams will respond differently, to adversity, and we get to see what U of A's made of. They got a team; they're talking championship level team. They'll bounce back and give Stanford all they can give them, and play a close game, hopefully. And if they can pull it out down there, it'd be a great win for them.
They're going to play Randall if Solomon is not able to go, and Randall is completely different than Solomon. I don't know if you saw him and his scrambling skills against UCLA, but what type of problems could he present for Stanford?
Well, you know, the Stanford, if they're going to, I'm sure, you know, the coaches they have, they got a great coaching staff. You get a guy that can't, you know, necessarily, not that he can't, but not as efficiently throw the ball downfield. You know, they're able to stack the box and play down close to the line of scrimmage, knowing that, the quarterback they have in there is not going to probably kill him or beat him throwing the ball. Force them to be physical and run the ball. So, you know, it's going to be a really tough physical game. I mean, offensively, U of A is going to have to pound it out and grind to get those first downs. But Randall's going to have to make some throws. You know, he's going to have to get the ball out on some screens, some bubbles, and they're going to have to take a few shots. They have skilled receivers. So if he's the quarterback, I don't know why you put that label on him if he can't throw the football. If he's the running quarterback, then call him a running back and put him in a whatever wildcat formation you want to call it, and you know, just say, you know, he's not a quarterback. But if he's a QB, he can throw the ball. You know, pick your moments, pick your time, and you know, let him make some big plays. But he will make some plays running the ball. He's fast, he's quick, and explosive. And I think, you know, it adds a little element that Anu doesn't have, which is the ability to get out of the pocket and you know, turn bad plays into good ones. So a challenge, though, because Stanford, I think, is playing really confident on defense. And their offense looks good, and it's not going to be an easy game for them.
Arizona at Stanford. Now, Arizona State, last week, I think you were tapping the brakes a little bit on people being upset and a little bit aggravated. I'm very aggravated where things are right now. I did not like hearing Todd Graham saying after the game, this is still the best team I've ever coached. I just think fans don't want to hear that anymore. Where are you at this week on Arizona State?
Looking forward to seeing them bounce back, see what kind of leaders they have, what kind of players they are, what kind of team we really get to see what they're made of right now. We're talking championship-level team and, you know, national championship and Pac-12 championship, and that's all you hear out of there. Sometimes that's tough when things don't go that way. You'll get the players' mindset that they are that level of a team, and sometimes talking about it is one thing, but you got to go out there and do it. You got to play up to that level. You got to play at a championship level. And so far, we haven't seen that. You know, we've seen them struggle a little bit. And not dictate on the offense, the tempo, going in and trying to slow things down for whatever reason. That's what their game plan was, and it just didn't work for them. And also defensively, you got to take angles that are keeping guys in contain, and you got to tackle. And if you can't do either one of those, then you can't talk about it being the best team you've ever coached or a championship level team, because those are simple things that could be fixed. I've been in contact with Perkovici. Said they had a great practice, one of the best practices of the year. So as players and as a football team, people are aggravated. Well, fine, be aggravated. Drive around in that hot, sweaty valley down there with the sweat all over yourselves and being mad at ASU. It's not going to do any good. The ASU football players, they won't say it, but I'll say it for them. They don't care. They want to get their stuff figured out. They want to figure out what they need to do better. Fans, hey, they're the people that sit there in the stands and either cheer or boo for you. So I'll say it for them. Don't worry about the fans. They can be mad and aggravated and upset by all these speculations of how great the team's going to be. They know what they're made of. They know who they are. They need to get back to basics, and I think they're going to be just fine. I mean, you go down and play UCLA, and a very tough team that's looking really good. Hey, if they go get blown out after in UCLA, then okay, fans have a right. But if they go down there and win, those fans that are aggravated, how quickly their moods will change.
Is there something to having a coach say, this is the best team that I've ever coached? Coaches will always say that. Players would say, what's he talking about? This team has issues here, here, and here. There's been a lot made of Todd Graham being so straightforward and out there about how great the team is. Even some people at ASU have told me that they wish he would dial it back a little bit. Where are you at on that with Coach Graham?
I don't think there's anything wrong with being optimistic, but I think sometimes that optimism should be contained inside the walls that they live in day to day. Let the public perceive and judge if it's the greatest team you've coached or if they're the great team that we're speaking of. And so far words have been floated out there, and the actions haven't quite backed up those words. So he's going to keep preaching that. That's his mojo. That's what he does. He motivates those guys and tells them they're the best. He believes that you embrace the grind, and you only find greatness through hard work and perseverance. And he knows what's going on in that building, and everyone out there on the radio and pen in their hand, they're not in those walls. So for him to do that is just keeping those guys positive, keeping them upbeat, keeping them able to believe in themselves. But I'm looking at the leaders of this team, Salamo Fiso and Mike Bercovici, DJ Foster. Those guys are the ones that have to step up. And if it's getting the coaches out of there and having a team meeting or whatever it is, it's about, like I just said, football can be really complicated and be really extremely overthought sometimes, mm-hmm. instead of just getting back to hand the ball off, block your dude, go get a first down, tackle the guy with the ball, take the right angle, don't take a bad angle, don't miss the flat-footed quarterback in the pocket and allow him to break out of contain and throw to a, Juju Smith, and then take a bad angle. I mean, it's just bad football right now. So that can be fixed by just getting back to basics. They're not playing horribly. They're not the awful team that everybody wants to make them out to be. They got talent. They know it. Now it's time for the leaders to demand the best from their guys around them, shut out all the noise. Hey, it's them against everyone now, because everyone's bummed and mad. And, man, what's wrong with these guys? They're supposed to be a national championship. Well, there's a process that has to happen along the way, and sometimes it doesn't go the way the fans want. So this team's going to have a chance to bounce back, and we'll get to see really what they're made of this weekend, which is exciting for me. I don't know, everybody else hopefully out there is going to be optimistic and root for them and don't jump off the wagon as soon as they go 3-and-out.
Jake Plummer with us for a couple of minutes. Before I let you go, so there's been a lot made about the Big 12 and five-hour football games and and how that is playing towards getting guys ready for the NFL, that the college game has kind of gotten into a spread offense. Linemen don't know how to block downfield anymore because all they're doing is pass blocking. They don't know how to run block. That the game is being impacted negatively starting at the college and even high schools that are running spread, and it goes over to the NFL. Do you see any correlation in the game of football right now with spread offense being a negative?
It's just a trend. It's what's happening. And I think we're seeing you know, some of the defenses in the NFL starting to catch up with that trend, whether it's, with the hybrid QBs like Kaepernick and Russell Wilson. You're seeing some defenses that are catching up. It always happens. You know, one side of the ball will do something different and change, and then all of a sudden it requires defensive coordinators to get creative and find ways to either, get smaller defenders that can fly around or come out with a, massive D-line that can get after the quarterbacks. You know, it's just a trend. It's just what's happening. It's what we're into right now. You know, that has definitely, I think it's hurt, somewhat the quality of quarterbacks in the NFL. You know, there's some good ones. There's a lot of great ones out there. But then once those guys go down, you're looking at some of these backups and, they just can't get it done. And I don't know if that's from, not experiencing what it's like to play in the NFL. It's a whole different level. But I don't think that the spread offense is hurting anybody or change or making the game less of a game. It's still entertaining. I like it because it's given some guys that normally would not be able to play quarterback a chance to get out there and play and be athletic and do some fun things and not just stand in the pocket. So there's good and there's bad. Whether it's hurting the NFL or not, I think that the NFL, cutting back on their practice schedule and the way they practice, that's hurting somewhat the old line in the NFL. You got to hit. You got to put body on body to get ready for those games on Sunday. And when you limit the amount of times you're in full pads and hitting, it's hard for an old lineman to stop those D linemen, especially those DNs that are 4-4, 4-5 dudes that are just trained to get in a 3-point stance and bust off the ball and get back there to that point where the quarterback is. That's a tough job for an old lineman. So the game's changing. It always evolves and goes through an ebb and a flow. Right now we're in one where spread offenses are kind of dominating. The length of the game, though, is definitely something that needs to change. Those long, long games, that's hard. I don't know how people watch all those games. I try to watch one and try to watch them live, and they go long. It takes up a large chunk of your day.
Well, and there's also Thursday Night Football asking players to turn right back around and play 4 days later. And I mean, there's concerns that I have about too much football, and like you said, the length of games. 5 hours of a Texas Tech against TCU game may be entertaining with the scoreboard, but for the players, I think you're asking an awful lot. Before I let you go, Adrian Peterson, and you're up there, you may have heard, you may not have, with the Denver Riders yesterday, talking about how he could have come right out of high school to play in the NFL. Did you hear that? Do you think a high school kid could walk right out and play in the game today?
Maybe there's some guys that might have that ability. I think Adrian Peterson to say something like that, it doesn't shock me. He's proclaimed himself as the greatest running back ever and Hall of Fame already. I mean, these guys today, I don't know. They get caught up in building up their brand and trying to convince people how great they are instead of just like he did last week, just get on the field and show us, man. The guy showed us why, he was missed so badly by the Vikings last year. The guy can run the ball. He's a beast out there. I always prefer the guys that just, did their talking on the field, yep. and with their actions. But, if he thinks he could come out and play after high school, then, it's too late now, man. You're already in the pros and you played in college. So that's speculation, and I get tired of speculation. Everybody wants to speculate. And what happens if Mike Perkovici had gotten to start more games last year? Let's go through and look at the first three games this year. Had he had more? Come on. That's trying to fill up too much time on the airwaves. Let's talk about meaningful stuff, like, putting a little touch on the ball down in the red zone when you got a guy open. That's the stuff I want to talk about, because that's football, and that could be fixed. Adrian Peterson, have fun against this Cardinals defense. They're a beast. Or the Broncos defense. I mean, they're a beast.
Well, okay, so let me just circle back and then I'll let you go. Mike Norvell, play call at the 1 yard line, out of the shotgun, Berkovici. Fans have just gone crazy with that. It's a backup center. Nick Kelly's not in the game. What did you make out of that? Did you see that? That's the play everyone's been talking about down here this week, along with the one you alluded to earlier, the Juju Smith run.
Yeah, a guy goes down, you don't just scrap your playbook. A backup center's, I mean, good Lord. His job's to get in there and block. First thing you've got to do is snap the ball. Bad play call? No, I don't think so at all. It's what their offense is geared to do. They spend a lot of time in shotgun. You want to go into a whole other segment here, we can stay online and talk a long time about this, but everyone's in shotgun. I believe the guys need to be under center. Gives you a chance to be down there right in the heat of things and you know, getting under center sometimes is a good thing to do, but hey, it's their offense. It's what they do. They're not going to just change things because a center goes down. You got to have a guy that's able to come in and back a guy up. I mean, it's, again, simple football. Grab the ball, get down in your stance, snap it to the quarterback, catch it, hand it to the guy, make the play. When you don't do it, it's just making errors. It happens every day in practice. It happens a lot as a quarterback. Got to clean that stuff up. And, you know, hey, everybody wants to talk about it and get mad at Norvell, but he's just calling the offense because that's what his job is.
It's pretty interesting down here right now. That's all I can – I haven't seen – at least they care, though, Jake. That's the thing. There's not apathy down here right now. There's a lot of anger, and which is fine.
It's good. Everyone's into it. Everyone's going. But remember, these are college kids, and they're going to bounce back. They'll be all right. In the meantime, enjoy watching the Cardinals, man. 3-0. Those guys are looking really, really good on defense. They look amazing. And, you know, that offense is running at a nice clip right now. Carson and all them receivers, especially Larry Fitzgerald. Got to love watching that guy kind of have a little bit of a rebirth right now and dominate.
As always, appreciate the time. Thanks.
Hey, thank you, Brad. You have a good week.
So one of the things that caught my eye, I mentioned this to Eric this morning. This is not a laughing matter, but there was a Brazilian, but to me, it's funny. We know that soccer is taken entirely too serious worldwide. People get trampled to death at stadiums. Soccer is the number one sport in the world. Here in the United States, it's gained some traction, and we continue to see it grow. No, it's not the NFL yet, but it will be at some point in time, probably when I'm on the wrong side of the grass. But Brazilian referee Gabriel Murta in Brazil this week pulled out a gun during an amateur soccer match. So think about this. This is a referee that has a gun in his waistband, and he pulls it out because one of the players assaulted him on the field. I don't know, when you're a referee and you're out there doing your thing, let me make sure I have my whistle. I'm a soccer referee. I have to have that little can of spray that puts the line for when they have their free kicks. I have to have my little card that I sit there when they give them the yellow card. I give them the red card. I have to have a pencil and a little notepad to write it down in the book when you say book them. Oh, yeah, I got to pack my pistol because, of course, I'm a soccer referee. I've seen all sorts of things. This referee said he was beaten on the field and went to the locker room. So after he was beaten on the field, he came back wearing his yellow shirt and his shorts, and he had his gun in his waistband. Of course he did.
This story is absolutely no surprise to me. Number one, I've been to Brazil. Number two, I've been to a soccer game in Brazil. A bunch of my friends and I, when we were younger, we went over there to Rio, and we went to check out a soccer game, and when we got our tickets, they said, "We're going to put you under the overhang." Okay. We just suggest everyone not from Brazil sits under the overhang. Okay, why is that? Oh, the fans in the upper deck like to throw bags of urine. So,
All right. So
if you're under the overhang, you'll be safe from the flying bags of urine.
Awesome.
Uh-huh.
Now, I've heard that sort of story from ASU fans going to Tucson. I have heard that. I'm not making that up. So this referee says, "I took a slap to the face and a kick to the shin. I was pressured by several players. And so I sought the gun in the locker room to arrest the offending player. But he ran."
If soccer does become as big in this country as you think it is, are all the shenanigans that come along with soccer going to follow it to the United States?
You mean the guys that fall on the ground look like they were shot by an arrow through their knee and they can never walk again?
But that's nothing compared to referees toting guns at soccer games.
Wouldn't it be fun to go like to an NBA game and have Dick Bavetta pull the gun out and just say
nothing? There would be nothing fun about that.
See, NBA players already are packing pistols.
The gorilla is allowed to have his T-shirt gun. That's about the only gun I want to see. So,
referee said he acted in self-defense. Everyone knows the difficulty of amateur championships. The referee have already been through difficult situations. We've had several cases of referees being assaulted and even shot. Ed Hockley was saying to Cam Newton the other day, you don't deserve that call yet.
He brings his guns to every game.
His guns. That's it. You stole it. You stole it. Nicely done. So that's in the middle of a match. This ref pulls out a gun. I can't get through that story. It's just too good. It's too good. I mentioned to Jake about the Adrian Peterson story. Of him saying to the Denver media that he could have turned pro out of high school. you know, I'm trying to think of players here in Arizona that I've seen that could turn pro. Christian Kirk probably could have turned pro, if you think about it. He had the speed. He doesn't have the size.
He does have the size.
You think?
Yeah, he's built
for
like
NFL.
He's built like an NFL player right now.
As an 18-year-old.
Yes.
Well, he's
5'11", and he weighs 205 pounds.
He put
the gun
shows on when he came in here.
There's not 1 ounce of body fat on him.
You know, you're right in one sense. I remember he was in here with the tank top on. He was doing the gun show.
Because remember he asked Kyle on who benches more. And Kyle's like, look at him.
Yeah.
Who do you think benches more?
But does that, just because he's 18, if he takes one big hit from a 25-year-old, is his body ready to withstand that one big hit? That would be my question. A guy like Byron Murphy, who's the number one player in the state this year at Saguaro. I have not seen him play it. Have you seen him play in person?
Yeah, he's phenomenal. He's a two-way guy.
No, but when you say phenomenal, is he Christian Kirk?
No, no one's Christian Kirk, but he's a very good player. We might not see a better skill player ever in the history of our lifetime than Christian Kirk. He was dominant.
When I was watching Christian Kirk the other day in the A&M game, he reminds me of Deion Sanders a little bit when he gets in the open field.
That's an interesting comparison.
Just when he gets in the open field.
He's so much stronger than Deion, though. Like
no,
when
no,
you,
all,
if you could catch Deion, you
are.
Could tackle him if he wasn't running out of bounds.
All players nowadays are just so much physically bigger than
yep.
when you watch those guys.
Yep.
But no, when you see Christian Kirk's speed and you watch Deion Sanders when he was at Florida State, it was the same sort of deal.
Vision. They both have great vision.
So no, but really, you felt like Christian Kirk. You would agree with Adrian Peterson. There are certain high school kids that could just turn pro.
Very few, though. I mean,
no. Fit. When I look at them,
like Jadeveon Clowney was probably physically ready to play in the NFL. Mentally, he wasn't.
Yeah.
But before he went to South Carolina, he definitely looked the part.
I mean, they're talking this because of Fournette.
Yeah.
And when I see Fournette. Even then, you go to college for a couple of years. Be 20.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to. You don't.
The NFL is going to be there. I mean, it's not unless this guy rips up his knees.
But it's like Todd Gurley this week.
Yeah.
You know, there are those. There's always going to be the example of players that went back to college and then they get hurt. So, Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat.